But why does he attack us at all?
Dalla said, tapping black-gloved fingers on the bridge railing.
Something's wrong here. He provoked us, but he has no way of causing us damage. Why did he call attention to himself?
She mused.
And how did he find us here?
Commander Kratos answered her, though she had been muttering to herself. I can't speculate on that, Admiral.
Bring the Star Destroyers about, she said. Lock a tractor beam on the Sun Crusher next time it passes.
The Sun Crusher's pilot is maneuvering at speeds much too high for us to be certain of a firm lock, Kratos said. Dalla glared at him.
Does that mean you are unable to try?
No, Admiral. Kratos turned and clapped his hands, directing the tactical officers on the bridge. You heard the Admiral. Set to it immediately.
Admiral, the Sun Crusher is signaling us, the comm officer said. Voice-only transmission.
Dalla whirled.
Put the pilot on.
With a crackle, the thin voice of a mere boy echoed through the Gorgon's command center.
Admiral Dalla, I'm Kip Duron. Remember me?
I hope so. You put me under a death sentence. That made quite an impression on me. I hope it made some sort of impression on you.
Dalla recalled the wiry, dark-haired youth who had been taken prisoner along with the rebels who had blundered into the Maw installation. She motioned for the comm officer to open a channel.
Kip Duron, if you surrender immediately and deliver the Sun Crusher intact, we will take you to the planet of your choice. You can be free. Don't be foolish.
Not a chance, Admiral.
Kip laughed at her. I'm thumbing my nose at your supposed imperial superiority.
I'll take my chances.
He cut off the transmission and streaked by again, firing darts of laser energy that bounced harmlessly off the shielded hull of the Star Destroyer.
Tractor beam lock, the tactical officer said.
Lost it.
Admiral,
the sensor chief broke in, his voice filled with urgency.
I'm picking up unusual readings from the star cluster. The blue giants are fluctuating, all seven of them. I've never seen anything like...
Dalla froze, her mouth dropped open in horror as she suddenly realized the terrible plan this boy had put into effect against her fleet.
Full about, she shouted. 180 degrees, maximum speed. Get out of the nebula now.
But, Admiral, Commander Kratos said.
He's used the Sun Crusher, she screamed. The stars are going to explode. He's just trying to stall us here, so we'll be trapped.
Kratos scrambled to the navigation station himself. The Gorgon lurched as the sublight engines kicked in, spinning the enormous Star Destroyer about.
We no longer have our navicomputer lock on Coruscant, the navigation officer said. When we turned to strike at the Sun Crusher, we lost our alignment.
Get us out of here now, Dalla said. Any vector. Inform the Basilisk.
The sublight engines powered up, blasting as they lumbered away from the center of the nebula, picking up speed. The hyperdrive engines were primed, gathering power. The Star Destroyers began to move away. Then all the stars exploded. Kip Duron watched the Star Destroyers wheel about and flee like wounded banthas.
You can't get away fast enough.
He smiled.
Not fast enough.
The Gorgon and the Basilisk began to heave themselves through the nebula at top speed, abandoning scores of TIE fighters. The small Imperial fighters veered off in a panic when their mothership suddenly turned to run. Kip ignored the rest of the TIE fighters and punched his engines to twice the Sun Crusher's maximum rated capacity, shooting straight up and out of the plane of the nebular cloud. When the cluster of blue giants detonated, concentric shockwaves of blinding light and searing radiation blasted outward like a cosmic hurricane. The Gorgon had managed to pull two ship lengths ahead of the Basilisk. Hauling on the controls, Kip continued the Sun Crusher's race upward, confident that the quantum armor would protect him from the worst. The incredible surge of energy from the supernovas darkened his viewports to near opacity. Curtains of fire overtook the Basilisk, washing over the Star Destroyer and igniting it like another tiny nova erupting in the nebula as the firestorm front swept on. The view screen blackened, but where the Gorgon had been, Kip saw another flash, and then the firestorm obliterated all detail. After his screens opaqued completely, Kip used the onboard navicomputer to set a new course. This was just the beginning. Leaving the Galactic Inferno behind him and awed by the power of the Sun Crusher, Kip moved off to seek out those remaining worlds that still swore allegiance to the Empire. Now, without doubt, he had all the power he needed.
34.
With the morning coolness of Yavin 4, Ambassador Kilgall rose in her austere quarters and basked in the shadowy dampness of the stone temple. She had been at the Jedi Praxium for only a few days, but already she felt as if the whole universe had opened for her. Master Skywalker's exercises in attuning her mind to the Force had shown her how to turn her gaze in a new direction, to see things in full view that she had previously only glimpsed out of the corners of her eyes. He had given her a nudge down a long, smooth slope of discovery. The more she learned, the easier it was to learn more. She splashed tepid water across her face, moistening her rubbery skin, scrubbing the delicate tendrils that hung beneath her slit of a mouth. Though the air of the jungle moon was thick with humidity, she still felt more comfortable when she could keep her exposed skin moist. Kilgall left her quarters and moved to join the dozen other Jedi candidates in the dining hall, where each would consume a small breakfast of fruits or meats compatible with his or her biochemistry. Dorsk 81 sat at a table contemplating colored rectangles of processed nutrients. Because he had lived for so long on a self-contained, environmentally controlled world, the cloned Jedi trainee could not digest foods that had not been heavily processed. The gaunt, hardened Jedi Cam Solusar attempted to talk to wild-haired Streen, who kept flicking his gaze from side to side as if distracted. The rest of the Jedi trainees sat by themselves or in small groups, talking uneasily. Kilgall did not see Master Skywalker among them. He was usually the first to enter the dining hall, waiting for his students to join him. The other Jedi trainees seemed disconcerted by the change of routine. Kilgall worked the food processing unit to prepare a breakfast of diced smoked fish and a pungent-tasting grain mash she enjoyed. Finally, she asked the students in general, "Where is Master Skywalker?" The trainees looked at each other as if they had been wanting to ask the same question. Streen stood up and looked around in alarm. "It's too quiet," he said. "Too quiet. I wanted it quiet, but this is too much. I can't hear Master Skywalker. I could always sense voices in my head. I hear all of yours. It's too quiet." He sat down again as if embarrassed. "Too quiet." Tion rushed into the dining hall, clutching her twin-boxed musical instrument. Her silvery hair streamed behind her in a wild mass, and her pearly eyes were wide and panic-stricken. "Come quickly, I've found Master Skywalker." Without question, without confusion, all the Jedi trainees rose in a coordinated flowing movement. They moved together and sprinted after Tion as she ran down the winding moss-grown halls. Kilgall attempted to keep up with the more athletic members, such as Kirana Tai and Tion. They ran through the echoing grand audience chamber where vines covered the walls and the long polished seats stood empty in shafts of sunlight. "This way," Tion said. "I don't know what's happened to him." They reached a back staircase of worn stone steps that led to the observation platform at the top of the ziggurat. Kilgall drew up short as she noticed the robed figure sprawled in the flagstones under the sky. His hands were thrown back as if to defend against something. "Master Skywalker," she called. The other trainees rushed forward. Kilgall pushed through the gathered students and knelt beside the fallen man. Luke's face seemed curdled in an outcry of pain or fear. His eyes were squeezed shut, his lips were curled back in a grimace. On the stone floor beside him lay his lightsaber, as if it had proved useless against whatever enemy he had fought. Kilgall propped Luke's head up, touching his pale brown hair. Rivulets of cold sweat glistened on his face, but she felt no warmth on his skin. She probed, using her newfound abilities in the Force, desperately searching. "What happened to him?" Dorsk 81 said in great alarm. "Is he alive?" Streen asked. "I can't hear him." Kilgall probed with her sensing abilities and shook her orange and muddy green head. "He's breathing. I can sense very little heartbeat, just the faintest pulse. But I can't find him inside."
When I touch him with the force, all I find is a great empty spot.
She turned to look at the others with her sad, round, Calamarian eyes.
It's as if he has left us.
What can we do? Kiranatai asked. Kilgal cradled Luke's motionless head in her lap and blinked her huge Calamarian eyes, unable to speak for a long moment.
We are all alone now, she finally said.
End of Dark Apprentice, the Jedi Academy Trilogy, Volume 2, by Kevin J. Anderson. Read by Chuck Benson in the studios of Talking Book Publishers, Incorporated, for the Library of Congress, September 1995. For special distribution as authorized by Act of Congress under Public Law 89-522, with the permission of the copyright holder and the publisher, Bantam Books, a division of Bantam Doubleday Dell Publishing Group, Incorporated. 1540 Broadway, New York, New York, 10036. If you found any cassette in this book to be defective, please place a rubber band or piece of string around that cassette for identification. Place it in the container on top of the front stack of cassettes.